Thank you, Pam, and the board of electing me. Well, I'm going to use a couple of sentences that doesn't really have anything to do much with AA. It had to do with me. And my name's Helen. I am an alcoholic. I'm always happy with the assembly gathering for an AA weekend, and that audience participation. I haven't been to many weekends of AA that the audience participated, but you guys do. I went to a birthday one time where all of them did, practically. Go forward or say something or sit down. And I noted the hand clapping, and I didn't mean to get into this, but I was sick when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I liked the routine. And when some of it changed now and then, that didn't, the big book hasn't changed, but I didn't like it. I still don't. So my home group at that time, now my home group is in Roswell, and it's There Is a Solution is the name of it, Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Somehow my home group at that time, many years ago, we didn't used to clap. Did you know that? We didn't clap at anything except at the end. And they probably were glad for us to go home. And they started clapping for everything, you know. And I was in that meeting, of course, and I said, where did this come from? So I walked over and whispered to someone, you shouldn't do this. And he said, let it go. And I even brought it up at the meeting itself. See, I couldn't leave it. I couldn't let it go. And usually I have to go ahead and do it before I know I should have. And I said, it's bad for the discussion leader because, you know, they have a little ego up there, and clapping makes it worse. I didn't take a drink over it. And guess what? I was about the last person before they closed the meeting, and they clapped. So, you know, we don't have to do everything. We can make our own decisions. The only thing is, don't take it to the group. Like at the end of the meeting when people go like this. Don't take it to the group. Is that advice? Okay, I read a little bit out of the big book. And part of my story is feeling different. Now, I bet everyone here would identify with that. And even if they're not alcoholic, I think all of us have that sometimes. But as an alcoholic, not yet. When I was feeling different, I was a child. I was born in LaGrange, Georgia. I met my husband. Yeah. at the drugstore where I worked at age 15. And they had a lunch and dinner. I don't know if anybody as old as I am here that small towns used to have that. And so I waited on tables, still going to school. And my husband used to be. He'd show up and get a milkshake. And they taught us how to put ice cream in it. And if you roll this thing, it won't come up solid. It just comes around the edge of the thing you pick it up with. You know what I mean? I didn't do that. I gave him the whole, so he married me. Eventually. And let me tell you how I felt in those years. A Vision for You, if anyone's got their book, 151. It says there was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There are always one more attempt and one more failure. I like that because it fits most of us, I think. And my father worked in the cotton mill, back to the family, and we lived in a three-room house in what was called Dunson Village. Cotton mill owned the homes. I've been around a while. And we picked cotton. At 5 years old, I helped pick cotton, my family, to pay their bills. And I almost forgot about that. Occurred to me that I'm going to do something different. I'm going to speak about me and what happened. So, my mother drank. I hardly ever mentioned her drinking. But I knew nothing about that. I was growing up in it. My mother and father used to, my father did most of the heating. And it wasn't, I thought, I was so uncomfortable in those years. I surely thought I was adopted. I'm in the wrong home. I was adopted. But I know my mother loved me. And I know that I was not adopted. So, but that was the feeling I had, even at a young age. So it wasn't so different what I needed when I started drinking. And the reason I like that word, different, because I believed you didn't understand, even when I got to AA. So, I was born in LaGrange, Georgia, married at 16, had three children. And if you had not been born in LaGrange, married at 16, had three children, you would not understand. And look at that one. I bet most of you understand. I like the way description of the allegory? The presentation of ideas by means of stories. Similar and are used for tracking or explaining. And I counted the stories in the back. And I counted how many pages they were on. And I wrote it down. Where did I put it? I bet you never thought about it. Did you ever think about counting the stories?
No.
Identification. 32 stories, that's not counting Bill and Bob's. 181 pages of stories. Have you ever thought about that? More than half the book. So it is so important. But since I felt different and nobody I ran into was born in LaGrange, Georgia, and I went that route. I thought about it that way. And when I picked up a drink, all of that went away. I was almost like a new person. I wasn't thinking about me anymore, but I was thinking about having fun. And the fact that my teenage years were raising children, I thought, Mama, I didn't ever have any fun. And so, why not now? And when I think of it, I usually do it. Drinking. So, I wondered about people, though. I didn't only think about me. I wondered about other people. And what they thought about me. You can see I was stuck. And it took a while for me to change my mind. I remember getting out the iron. Now you guys think something else. See, that's why I brought up those stories and identification. Identify in another area. I'm sure you don't iron. Right? So, I would have a beer, and then I'd have two in the morning, because I was going to have to pick up the kids at 3 o'clock. And so, I thought, I can do that. I can go out and sit and have fun. And get back at 3 o'clock, pick up the kids. Sounds simple to me. And so that iron went on the shelf. I left. And what fun that was. Sitting in a bar talking to people. And it was a good bar though. It was, you know. Listen, it was in Buckhead, next to a theater that used to be there. And we read poetry. And nobody would know, because I'd get back by 3 o'clock. I didn't always get back at 3 o'clock. And so I'd be watching the clock, though, and say, oh, well, they'll come on home. Somebody will pick them up. No buses then in up our street and school buses. So I thought, I'll get there before Neil gets home, my husband. And, you know, like, he usually got in around 6. So I would leave at 4:30 and get there by before, and he won't know it. So I kept watching the clock, and all of a sudden, it was 6:30. So I said, oh, well, I'll wait, and wait till he goes to sleep. Was that different? audience participation, how many thought your own family wouldn't know when you weren't there. I'm so glad I got to identification. I talk it now until somebody rolls their eyes. I have to hush. And things begin to happen. Let me tell you something you might not know. You're not anonymous in jail. Especially Cobb County. And that's where I ended up. More than once. And it was embarrassing. It was, I hid it, or tried to, of course. But in those days, they sent you a letter out to send your license in. I don't know what they do now, and I'm glad I don't know what they do now. And we had little cardboard licenses. Anybody old enough to have had one of those in the early days? Good. So, my husband had to get the insurance, big payment insurance. And it doubled what was normal to get my license back. But they typed on the bottom of that paper license that something, I don't know the words, but it went 3 years. I had to take that insurance for 3 years. And so I couldn't go to the bank and show a license. What you going to do? We were there long enough I didn't have to show it. But if I did, I didn't go. And I thought, everybody's going to know. Now, everybody, what am I going to do? But I got it back temporarily. Anyway, I thought about my mother-in-law called, and I didn't know she called. I was in a blackout. And the next morning, I happened to think about my mother-in-law and call her. She said, "You were in bad shape yesterday, weren't you?" I don't know what I said the day before. And I didn't admit I didn't know what I said. She sent her minister to me. Good Baptist, and I didn't happen to be drinking that day, and he knocked on the door, and ministers used to visit, I don't know if they do now, and he come in, sit down, I made him a cup of coffee, but I wasn't drinking, and he didn't bring it up. Nor did I. I heard from the family, one of them though, that my mother-in-law sent him over there and talked to me about my drinking. He went back and told her that I wasn't drinking. I was just fine. Made a cup of coffee. I know that was one minister that doesn't know anything about alcoholism. So, I did some things that made it obvious. And I remember the reason I used the word anonymity is somebody went to jail that we were told not to mention his name. And so I called somebody else in the program then, and I was too. And I said, Can you mention someone's name when they are in jail? That anonymity doesn't cover that, does it? He said no. So I happened to mention his name. And that's why I mentioned mine. You know, I know. So, I got in more trouble. I didn't do drugs. I didn't go to doctors. I walked in Alcoholics Anonymous with my sister-in-law, finally. But I called AA. I called the AA central office 2 years before I ever made a meeting. But I knew nothing about it. But I knew, somehow I knew, that somebody was going, would come to my home. And I wouldn't tell them where I lived, and I wouldn't give them my phone number. Now they do that over the phone. They automatically have the number, I guess. 2 years later, now where did that thought come from? Where did I even think of AA? That was, what, 56 years ago? I'm 55 now. That it would even come up in my family. Or even though my mother drank, we'd never heard of, I have never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, but my sister-in-law had, and she lived next door to me. So she came down, she got some literature. She got those 12 questions. She brought them to me. Is AA for you? And I was drinking that morning when she came down. Acted as if I wasn't, but she knew. But I did take that test, and I got all of them but one. I checked the yes. Then when I checked no, said, has your drinking interfered with your job? I didn't work. When I finally got honest, though, raising three children is work. So, but that's the way I looked at it when I read it. So she got me ready. We went to a meeting. And I was asked to read How It Works. Did you know that How It Works is 5 pages long? Did you know that? But I read it somehow. And no women were there. The women, Al-Anons, were there with their husbands. It was an open AA meeting. I didn't know what an open or closed meeting was. My very first meeting, I didn't know nothing. And I still remember the guy's name who asked me to read How It Works. They called him Bill Bob because we had more than one Bill. And there's usually more than one Bill in AA. I see a couple of them here. So I asked him the next few meetings why he asked me, because I found out you don't ask your newcomer to read and for their first meeting. And he said, well, you know, I didn't drink for 2 days or three, and I looked pretty good. You know, that was a few years ago. and dressed up, fixed my face, and he said to me, and she was a good Baptist like her mother, and I learned later that she got on her knees half the night praying I would not cancel. And she had red eyes. She looked tired. She was a little overweight. And he said, I thought you brought her. That's what we can do sometimes, because it's being a liar without even saying anything. And that's what makes one, not saying anything. I remember at that meeting, though, I met some women in the Scotland group. And I read the book. I read all those 30-something I just counted earlier today to identify. I needed it. I wanted it. I went to lots of speaker meetings. I came in the first meeting December 66 and 1926, right? I got sober in September. So that meant I didn't drink for a little while, and then I drank. Because, I don't know because. I had AA, though. I did two things right. I kept going to meetings, and I got a sponsor. And I remember one evening, I was drinking, left early, and stopped on Piedmont. Scotland was at the Scotland. That's how they got their name. My church, Scotland Church. And sat at the bar and waited for the time to go to the meeting. And sitting by a guy. And all of a sudden I looked at my watch and I said, oh, it's about time. I'm going to be late to go to my AA meeting. He said, oh, are you going to an AA meeting? I said, yeah. You want to go? So, he said, yeah. Got in the car with me. And we ended up at the door, and we had a little trouble opening the door. And I turned around. He looked in. I looked in. My sponsor was sitting there in that meeting. And he turned around and left. I don't know how he got back, but walked, I guess. I give thanks ever so often that I didn't share that night. I stayed quiet. And my sponsor called me the next day. And she said, pick up the big book, bless you, and read it together. She didn't say, you were drinking. I knew she knew it. And she knew I knew it. Wasn't any point in talking about it. You know, sometimes you, if both of you know, you know, I didn't announce it in the group. And we didn't pick up white chips in those days. And she is one of those things that AA members just know. They are just the way you are and act and words you use. I got a joke I love. and a few others do too, that this woman, what was it, Cold State, with a lot of bad weather and snow, let's say Minnesota. And this woman, it was snowing, and she was afraid she'd be snowed in. And so she decided she ought to get some dog food in case she got snowed in. And so she went to the place to pick up stuff like that. And when she came in the door, there was a parrot sitting just inside the door. And he said, "You are ugly. You are so ugly." And she was just angry. And she went over to the manager and said, "I am not going to buy anything today. Terrible of you to teach that parrot that word." And so she left. But she realized next day she still, you know, had the same deal. So she had to go back. And so she walked in the door and she slowed up as she got to the parrot, and he said, "You know." Takes a little bit to, "I know who I am and what I am. And I would rather know than not know. Honesty with me." My first inventory to my sponsor, Elizabeth, was all about my husband. And she gave it back to me. And said, "Well, it's good you put this on paper, but it isn't your inventory." In its own way, it was mine. It was my thinking and how I was still doing things like that. And it took a while, but I was having fun in AA. I went to roundups, and I didn't stand, but I have been here before. Even brought books from the central office, and I didn't include that one because we missed our books this time. I'm looking at somebody who knows. I began to get AA. I used to be on the phones, was on the phones a long time, and someone called and they were drunk, drinking, and I was trying to get her to a meeting. And she said, "Oh, no, I can't go. I can't go to an AA meeting." And I said, "Why not?" And she said, "Well, I don't get out much." And I said, "How do you get your booze?" And she said, "That's personal." Well, it was. I agreed with her that it was. And there's even a step to cover that. And I probably didn't read it to her, though. And after a while, I picked up some things. I always had a sponsor until Maggie died at Atlanta Biscayne Room. And she was tough. I was afraid of her. And then I got desperate. And I was in trouble, not drinking trouble, just trouble, life trouble. And I picked up the phone and asked her if she would be my sponsor. And I argued about her to my husband over and over for years. Guess what? She became my sponsor. And she did, I do it that way now, the way she did it, because I knew her. And after she sponsored me, I felt the love, I heard the love, I knew, that's the side of her. Sometimes I don't always see both sides, but I'm beginning to. And I do my best for that one. So what I want to do, though, is tell you how she sponsored me. I called her one day and I said, do you need permission to do the right thing? And she said two words. One of them was no. Since I don't cuss, I never will forget that woman. As tough as she was a tough talker. My first sponsor was kind of like me, slow talker and easy sometimes. But now and then I'll pop up or something that matters because I know I taught principle and identification. And I try to get to the identification. I don't know if I say it very well, but it's mentioned. That's the reason the stories are in the back, and I read them first, not these particular one. This is a different book. And I thought, what's the difference in these things? Not much, because identifying isn't in what being born in LaGrange, Georgia, and having three children. That's not, it's what I thought about it. And when I listen to someone talk, and they all of a sudden say, after I give them a story, they'll say something like, oh, I never did that. I said, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about identify and relate. And there is the understanding. That's what needs to be understood. Although I have been in trouble, life trouble, and I decided I had not been meditating. I got sober, took my last drink on the second step, and I didn't go very much further then for several years. And then I had to because I got in trouble. All the fun, and that I was willing to have, and wanting to have, and working with people, it was wonderful. And yet, this came, something came that I didn't know what to do with, or what to do about. So without asking this time, I got the 11th step out of the 12 and 12, and I read it in an hour in my meditation and an hour at night. That was desperate, if you know what I mean. It took time. And I'd pick up on where I ended that morning, that evening, pick it back up the next morning and start again. And that sent me on down, up the steps, knowing that I've skipped a few. I skipped the amends for a while. I skipped telling, I skipped the fifth step. So I had to go backwards, but I knew I didn't want to drink. I had no doubt I didn't want to drink. And I really worked hard. And my first sponsor drank again when I was a year sober. And I said to myself, I didn't say it to her, how could she do that to me? That's a year sober thinking. But it takes maybe longer for others. Just identify yourself. And practically everyone says something like, it took a while. And it's okay for it to take a while. I just talked to somebody about the girl changing recently, and I could hear it, I could see it, and she was sober like maybe 20 years. And so I intend to stay with my slow southern talk, and I do. And keep on. I haven't given up, and I won't give up. I retired 2 years ago, and I'm busier than I was. I have phone calls coming in. I work in the yard. I talk to people. And somebody stayed in my house. We both were surprised. 6 hours. And they were not taking their inventory. I don't know what we talked about. And all of a sudden, it was 6 hours. And I didn't get tired. I didn't doze. People who doze in meetings, I think about it like, they feel safe. So I don't mind a few those in meetings. It takes me longer to say things than it does you. Thank you.